Chapter 4. Artemis, the Virgin. Artemis is born first. She's a babe for only moments, springing into gangly-limbed childhood between one breath and the next. Her mother is red-faced and sobbing, prostrate on the ground and reaching for her. "He's too big," she sobs. "He won't come out. I've failed. Hera has won, and I have failed." There's blood, too much blood, blood that she herself is still slick with. "No," she says firmly, kneeling between her mother's legs. "We have not failed." It takes too long, too much blood and screaming. But hours later, Leto sleeps, exhausted and pained, but alive. Her brother does not grow as she did, and she cleans him and swaddles him and holds him against her chest. There is too much intelligence for a freshly born babe in his eyes. She pets the soft, golden curls on top of his head. She looks to Leto, bloody and torn and nearly forced to die with her son inside of her, and decides that her mother's fate will never be her own. The only man she'll ever love is the one currently in her arms. Apollo grows, faster than he should, but slower than her, until they match. Until they are not quite adults, beautiful adolescents in a godly package. Her brother worries her. Sometimes he reminds her too much of their father, and she fears for him. She's never afraid of him, her golden twin brother. But in that regard, she thinks she may be alone. He's too smart and not careful, and feels as if every beautiful thing is his to possess. The first time he forces himself on a mortal woman, she shoots a silver arrow through his shoulder. It bleeds, an arrow shot by her, more than it would if any other goddess had done it. "They are mine," she declares, standing in front of the scared girl with her torn clothes. "You will not touch what is mine." Apollo says, "Very well, sister," slick with blood, and she wants to go to him, to heal him, and take care of him as she has their whole lives. But she stands her ground. In this, she will not be moved. He leaves. And when she turns to comfort the girl, she's already gone. Her brother doesn't touch any other unwilling women after that, although there are still plenty of willing women. And why shouldn't there be? Apollo is gorgeous and strong, brave and just, when he forgets to be selfish and petty. There are men, however, whom are not always so willing. Nothing so harsh as that first time with that girl. Nothing that dramatic. But enough that it pains her to see the callous way her brother treats them. Artemis stays silent on that. She is not the patron god of all of humanity, and she can't hoard them all. Her brother is a warrior and a poet and harnesses his chariot to the sun so that he may bring light to all the world. She loves him, but sometimes she hates him. She is a huntress and a midwife, a bringer of life and a taker of it. There is something terrible in her power. She thinks this is what Persephone must feel like. As the goddess of spring and queen of the underworld. It's intoxicating, but it is a quiet sort of power, a harder one. He is the sun and she is the moon, and there are times she fears that is all she is, a reflection of her younger brother's brightness, cursed to be nothing more than a poor imitation. She's fully grown the first time it happens, older than many cities, and twice as beautiful as her brother's sunrises. She's sweat-soaked and blood-covered, but the mother and her sons sleep soundly, safely after the difficult birth. If she were to tell the other gods this, they would not believe her. But being the goddess of childbirth is her hardest job by far. "Come," the sister of the mother says, a pretty young thing with large eyes and a wide mouth. "Let's get you cleaned up." Artemis could clean herself up just fine, but allows the young woman to lead her to her room, to remove her blood-stained clothes and run a warm cloth over her limbs that are sticky with dried sweat. The woman goes to her knees before Artemis, running the cloth over her legs, and then the woman touches a place no one has ever touched. Artemis jerks with surprise, leaning down, her mouth agape. "My lady goddess," the woman murmurs, parting her wide mouth and licking her lips. "I would thank you for aiding my sister, if you be willing." There's a low, curling heat in the pit of her stomach, and something fluttering high in her chest. It's something she hasn't experienced before. "I am to remain a virgin," she says, blank, because many men have looked at her like this woman, and she was revolted by all of them. She is not revolted now. "Virginity is a man's invention and a man's concern, my lady," the woman says dismissively, beginning to move her hands in a way that makes Artemis flush all over. "There are no men here." That's the last bit of talking they do until morning. Artemis has many more eager women coming to her, offering to worship her. She accepts again and again, and there's never anything more than temporary sparks of desire. Yet she enjoys all the women who seek her out, is delighted by them, and seeks to delight them in return. She is bathing in a lake one evening, her golden hair having grown longer than she usually keeps it, and brushing past her shoulders. She'll have to cut it soon. She ducks beneath the serene, smooth lake, and when she pops her head up, there's the sound of rustling and footsteps, then clothing being shed. There's a man dipping his toes into the lake. And Artemis rises, ready to kill him for his insolence. Then she meets his scared eyes. And she's done nothing to provoke his fear, not yet. Then she has to look again, eyes raking over his naked body. And this person certainly looks like a man, yet. "Who are you?" she demands, hands on her hips. "Cypriotes, miss," the person says, and bends to pick up the discarded clothes. "Apologies, I did not expect anyone to be here. I'll go." "Why?" Artemis says, taking a guess. "There's plenty of water for two women to share." She knows she's guessed right when Cypriotes' mouth parts in surprise, and then widens in a pleased grin. "Thank you, lady," she says, dropping her dress back at the lake's edge and stepping into the water. "Your hair's a mess," she observes, looking at the tangled bun on top of Cypriotes' head. "Let me help you with that." "It's okay, miss," she says politely. Somehow, this woman hasn't figured out she's a goddess yet. Artemis is in no rush to tell her. She's scared enough of her as it is. "I insist," she says, swimming over and twisting Cypriotes around so her back is to Artemis. The woman's muscles are tense, and Artemis runs light fingers over the pale, crisscrossed, lashing scars. Artemis is smart, so she doesn't ask the obvious, stupid question, and undoes the woman's bun. Her tangled, long, black hair tumbles down to her hips. "What a mess," she says, not explaining whether she's talking about her hair or her back. Cypriotis relaxes, tilting her head forward as Artemis gently untangles her hair until it lies smooth. Artemis tries, but she can't get the woman from the lake out of her head. She lives alone at the edge of the village, doesn't bathe with the other women because they don't welcome her. They don't shun her, but they don't wash her hair or her back, and it makes Artemis's blood boil. She expects better from those she has claimed as her own. The sun's just setting when her brother appears at her side, watching her watch Cypriotis gather water from the well. "He's not your usual type, is he?" he asks, leaning against her and tangling his fingers in hers. "Yes," Artemis says. "She is." For the first time in her life, Artemis feels uncertain, but kicks at the door anyway. It opens. The wariness on Cypriotis' face is replaced by confusion. "Hi," Artemis says. "Do you like bear?" The creature is slung over her shoulders. She just killed it, and it occurs to her too late that a normal woman wouldn't be able to casually hold a bear across her back. "I like you," Cypriotis says, stepping aside to let her in. "You can bring the bear if you like." She offers Artemis warm wine and insists she sit as she skins the bear, sticking chunks of it on a spit and salting the rest of it. This time she keeps up a steady stream of conversation, eyes warm and smiles soft, and Artemis wishes she could blame the wine for the heat on her cheeks. "I like your shoulders," Artemis says, watching her finish preparing the bear meat. Cypriotis pauses and turns to Artemis, eyebrow raised. Her dress is stained red with the bear's blood, and her silky black hair is braided to the side. Artemis wants to run her fingers through it. "You do?" She stands, moves slowly in case this isn't what Cypriotis wants, and presses her hands to her back, the same way she had in the lake. "Yes, they're broad, strong, like mine." Cypriotis turns, and Artemis trails her hands from her shoulders to her face, pressing her thumb against Cypriotis' bottom lip. "The bear will burn," she says, eyes dark. "I'll bring you another one," Artemis says, walking her backward until they reach the bed, until Cypriotis' knees hit the edge of it and she falls back. Until Artemis can climb on top of her and straddle her waist. Cypriotis holds up a hand, and Artemis captures it with her own and turns it so she can leave a butterfly kiss on each knuckle. "I know who you are, Artemis," she whispers. Are you sure? No man can touch you." Artemis leans down, pressing more kisses across Cypriotis' collarbone, and says, "There are no men here." That's the last bit of talking they do until morning.